You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 11th of October 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, we're examining the recent adoption by the United Nations General Assembly of the Sustainable Development Goals, which succeed the Millennium Development Goals that have been helping to drive international economic advancement since the turn of the century. We will explore the broader mission of these new goals and consider the findings of a new UBS CIO paper on this theme, In Challenge Lies Opportunity. We'll hear too why public-private investment partnerships are at the heart of the discussion. We start with Simon Smiles, Chief Investment Officer for Ultra High Net Worth at UBS Wealth Management. He explains first how the very notion of sustainable investing shapes his thinking and advice for clients.
It's something that we've put an increasing amount of time into, and we've for a long period of time looked at longer term investments, things which are impacted or play to the impacts of demographics, of urbanisation, of population growth, etc. And increasingly, the focus of these longer term themes is also on sustainability, because if you are looking to invest money on 3, 5, 10 year basis, it has to be sustainable, both the trend but also the manner in which the investments are playing the trend. And so that coalescence of longer term horizon with sustainability is something which has almost naturally occurred. In parallel with that, our client base has increasing interest in things like impact investing. There are parts of our client base who like to invest along their values, so value-based investing works for them. Another part of the client base who's increasingly interested in the integration approach to sustainable investing, so integrating either a whole range and raft of sustainability criteria or a more pragmatic approach where particular sustainable criteria which are likely to have a potential meaningful impact on the future earnings and reputation of a company are taken into account alongside traditional valuation and discounting metrics, thereby increasing the veracity of the investment expectations.
Kerry Krasinski is a writer, educator and advisor on sustainability issues and teaches sustainable investing at Columbia's Earth Institute. When it comes to the shift to the new SDGs, what does this mean for the wider investment landscape?
It means increased awareness of targets that investors can start to consider when they want to have positive impact with their investment dollars.
Caroline Anstey is Global Head of UBS and Society. What does she believe are the key takeaways from the recent move at the United Nations to introduce the SDGs? Is it about private and public and how they cross over and how they innovate?
These are called sustainable development goals, but they're also sustainable investment goals. It's going to be impossible for these to be met through public financing or official development assistance, overseas aid. I think the aid numbers are about $135 billion. Government budgets are shrinking. We know that the SDGs have been costed to amount to some $2 to $3 trillion of new investment annually. So those are not small sums. And I think what is most striking, especially to someone like myself who comes originally from the world of development finance, is how much that old divide between public and private has now been bridged, and people are saying, yes, we need new public-private partnerships, we need innovative finance to raise the kind of money we're talking about to make the SDGs a reality.
Stephen Friedman is Head of Environmental, Social and Governance Investing at UBS and co-authored the new CIO paper on the theme of In Challenge Lies Opportunity. How does he characterize the move from the Millennium Development Goals to the new SDGs?
I think it's an important shift in several respects. The first one is that unlike the Millennium Development Goals, which were quite important, but they were essentially developed by a small group of people without a very open process. In contrast, the Sustainable Development Goals, that really was the result of a very broad-based consultation process. So really a lot of different stakeholders were included, and I think it also that will help in terms of giving them greater impact once we move into the implementation phase as of the beginning of next year. So that's one important distinction. The second one is that the MDGs were focused really just on developing countries. That's what they're about. It's about really development goals. In contrast, the SDGs are much more universal. you have development aspects in there, but sustainability is just as important, and that applies really broadly to all countries in the world. So both developing countries and developed countries are affected and will, you know, ultimately see some effect of these SDGs.
Stephen Friedman. Let's look next in more detail at the sustainable investment landscape. How does it look, and what are some of the most interesting themes? Kerry Krasinski again.
In Lima, Peru, the World Bank annual meeting is taking place, and there'll be another announcement of the UNEP Inquiry for a Sustainable Financial System reports will be out, and that will talk about gaps in investment versus ideal states of affairs. So I mention that because that's sort of the financial system version of these global goals. You need to know where you're trying to get to before you can start designing strategies to help you get there, if that makes sense. So there's starting to become a vision of where we need to be on environmental and social issues, and I think that's what we're seeing with these goal-setting efforts.
When it comes to innovative finance, then, what are the great opportunities for investors, in Caroline Anstey's view?
I think we're entering a sweet spot, and the sweet spot is that we know that more people want to invest in line with their values. They also, many of them still, unless they're core philanthropists, they'd like to get a return. I think the sweet spot is that the demand is there for people to invest in that way, and the opportunities are now there too, and the opportunities are there to get what we at UBS have called Performance Plus. What does that mean? It means all the performance you would associate with a traditional investment on average with the plus of a positive social or environmental footprint. If you can have it both, if you can have your cake and eat it, so to speak, I think that becomes very attractive. It's commonly assumed there's a trade-off. You want to do good, you can't do well. I think that that's a fallacy that has been borne out in many cases, and there are investment opportunities which will give you high rewards in terms of social footprint and also high financial rewards, and some of those are in areas around renewable energy. There are also a lot of opportunities in healthcare and healthcare delivery in emerging markets and even in advanced economies.
In terms of investment vehicles, is this an exciting area and one that's evolving quickly? Simon Smiles takes up the story.
These themes, particularly the longer-term themes, lend themselves to a range of different types of investments. You know, some lend themselves well to public equities, water being an example. Some lend themselves more to private equity-style investments, infrastructure, EM infrastructure in particular, mass transit, rail, etc. And others lend themselves very much to direct investing opportunities. And oncology, in fact, is one area that we've spent a lot of time on. It's an exciting theme. It's exciting with respect to the scientific advances being made. It's exciting with respect to the regulatory support for the sector. And it's an area where a cusp of being able to not just treat but cure, you know, what is the largest killer of people today, both in the developing world and the developed world.
Simon Smiles also explains why new creative solutions like the Oncology Fund can offer something of a template for the future.
We've spent a lot of time looking at longer term themes, and oncology is definitely a theme where, because of the rapid scientific advances, because of the favourable regulatory environment, and because of the dire need, there is compelling investment as well as social impact characteristics to investing there. You know, more broadly, though, impact investing, and particularly the process of mainstream impact investing, is something that at UBS we're focusing a lot on. You know, to date, impact investing has been focused typically on very niche, you know, small opportunities, which are often focused on primarily on the impact and the charitable side, and then a return may, you know, be associated with that. And that has traditionally turned off a lot of traditional investors. You know, people are looking to invest to make money. If they want to give their money away for charitable good, they go down the philanthropy route. But if we can change the context with respect to the impact investing perception and instead focus on fantastic investments which also have an appreciable positive social impact and do good, it becomes potentially a much more tangible and much more attractive investment opportunity for a much wider range of individuals and institutions.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at how public and private finance will need to work in concert to deliver sustainable development goals. What is the dynamic at the moment in terms of how effectively public and private finance work together? Stephen Friedman explains.
We wrote this report because we felt that for private clients, it may not be immediately clear why the Sustainable Development Goals really would matter, because it seems like it's a public initiative, and so why me? Why should I, as a private investor, care about the Sustainable Development Goals? And the key link here is that to fund them, to make these goals even remotely achievable, it's going to require resources that are of an order of magnitude that the public sector just cannot handle on its own. There's some figures we threw out in the report that were from UNCTAD, one of the UN organizations, and that put a number at a funding need of about $3.9 trillion per year. And if you compare that to available funding for such types of initiatives, there's a funding gap of about $2.5 trillion. But it's very clear that private capital will have to be mobilized, and that governments and international organizations and multilateral agencies, if they want to have a fighting chance to achieve these goals, they're going to have to try to harness private capital, and that this will happen in many ways. Part of this is having a regulatory framework that is conducive to deploying private capital. Part of it will be with incentives. So here you have the opportunity for private-public partnerships. One expression that has been used increasingly is blended finance, so basically where you're using both private and public finance for particular projects. Here the idea can often be that there's a way to try to make it more palatable for private investors to engage, because especially if you're investing in developing countries, often the risk-return profile may not be entirely appealing, and here with guarantees or with first-loss arrangements, public funds can be really used as a catalytic vehicle to draw in much larger amounts of private capital.
And how likely is it that these ambitions will be realized, in Kerry Krasinski's opinion?
There needs to be a recognition that not only investors, not only corporations, and not only policymakers can solve some of these larger problems, especially climate change, that they're going to need to do this together. And we're getting closer to that being the case. I would argue that the COP21 process isn't there yet. But I think that there needs to be systemic answers to systemic problems.
And what appetite is there from those who can shape systemic solutions to actually deliver?
What we need is to look at investment in two ways. There's new investment and there's existing investments. And different approaches can be taken to these two areas. On the new investment side, most of the action is going to be in infrastructure and fixed income. There's about $1 trillion a year expected in both categories. The nature of that new infrastructure and fixed income investment is most important, and groups like the PRI and the Climate Bonds Initiative are places to look for that important question. And then on the side of existing investments, whether it's public companies or fixed income, there are different questions that can be examined. But there's a limit to how much capital there is, and that's one of the challenges, is how do you raise trillions of dollars of capital at a time when pension funds have shortfalls, governments' budgets are strapped, companies themselves have trillions of dollars of cash often just sitting around. So there are solutions, but they're going to be hard, and it's going to take all hands on deck.
The success of the goals may ultimately depend on whether sustainable investment strategy becomes standard strategy for all investments. Here's Caroline Anstey again.
Ultimately, long-term financial performance is going to reside on integrating some of these factors into how you do your financial assessment. We know that some of these environmental, social, good governance issues are very key to long-term performance. And I think there is now, post-financial crisis, a very healthy debate about how can we shift the whole financial sector to thinking more about long-term value rather than the short-term, which has created a lot more volatility. I do think, though, that the point about the SDGs, like the MDGs before them, is that they are stretch goals. They are targets. I think certainly a lot of the drill down targets will be met. Whether you will meet by 2030, and they have an end date of 2030, whether you will have completely eradicated extreme poverty by that time. New figures have just come out saying that poverty has now gone down to 10%. I think you have a good shot at it. I think you will always have a bit of a residual there and people moving above and below the poverty line. But I think all these goals are goals that along the way, as they're measured, and there is a good thing that what you measure gets done, people can be held accountable. The measurement will be transparent. Much more emphasis will go on good data collection, which needs to be done. So I think there's a very good shot of meeting the indicators and moving along that continuum towards these what are, I think, very good stretch goals.
Finally, on today's installment, we look at investing for sustainable development from the individual investor perspective. How far are we from the time when sustainable investing isn't a separate notion at all? Kerry Krasinski.
There are different pools of asset owners, and individual investor is an extremely important one, especially perhaps the growing high net worth area. It maybe has something like 20 to 25% of global assets now. And the challenge is that those assets are growingly want to play this game, but they don't really have the options for taking part. And so the large banks are all looking into this. And I think that's the race that's underway, this top-down, bottom-up race to provide investment solutions that allow the millennials and others who are concerned about the future to actually have meaning with their money. And so whoever gets that right will probably win.
And finally, we asked Simon Smiles, too, when he thinks sustainable investing will be simply part and parcel of all sound investment strategy. Is it a pipe dream?
I don't think so at all. I mean, look at some of the issues that we've had, company-specific issues we've had, you know, just in the last month. Opaqueness with respect to companies, complexity, a lack of reporting, a lack of oversight. You know, these are issues which have led to significant destruction of value. Incorporating, therefore, factors, you know, sustainable, high-level factors, into the assessment and valuation of companies from the outset and take into account, you know, potential risks over the medium and longer term is actually just good financial analysis. You know, it should, for long-term investors, pay dividends to take into account the pollution history of a chemical company. It should take into account the lending practices and the countries that a particular bank lends to in terms of assessing the future risks of regulatory or other intervention. So the pragmatic integration approach, which is gaining hold across the wider sustainable investing community, I can see very easily becoming the norm. You know, integration of relevant environmental, social and governance factors into traditional analysts' expectations and forecasts and discount rates with respect to their modelling. It's not inconceivable that this is just an industry norm in 3-5 years' time.
And that's Simon Smiles bringing us to the end of this 53rd edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.